what kind of game you two are playing, but the noise stops. If I so much as hear a peep, I will evict both of you. Understood?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. This is season 5, episode 18, Great Sexpectations.
Right.
And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Yuck.
Yeah. Hi, Sarah.
On a scale of I am curious, Melrose, that's like a 8.5. Hi.
Hello, listeners. Thanks again for your patience through our try some weird shit July. It is over now. We appreciate all of you for hanging in. Sounds like you liked it, especially to all of those callers from last week's call-in episode. That was super fun. As we said, we will for sure be doing that again. Before we get into this very long episode, we want to tell you, or remind you rather, that Again With This episode 106, dropping August 5th, is going to be Let's Watch Vanessa Estelle Williams' debut episode of 9-1-1. This is a delight. I don't want to spoil anything, but she's real bitchy to a coworker, and I loved it. This episode is on Hulu. We'll link it in the show notes. You can get that and so very, very much more if you join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. If you join at any level of support, you get those weekly Friday, mostly weekly Friday episodes. And if you join at the $5 level, you also get the very special High Rollers bonus perk, which is our monthly 90210MD digests. The last one just happened. So you can still, if you join today, you can hear all of the horror from July.
We recently have learned that some of you are disregarding our advice and listening to it yourselves.
Yeah.
Do not do this.
Yeah, cut it out.
That's what the money is for.
That's right. So let us start with our B plot. Kimberly.
Before we start.
Okay.
I have some alternate title suggestions.
Great.
Oliver Titty Twister. David Copperfield.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Deke House.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And of course, the unchanged Hard Times.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Let's actually start with our B plot, which is just as classy as this episode title. Kimberly uses her tumor to box block Megan. Well, she does. Okay.
Yeah. She does.
Sorry to put it rudely, but that's what happens. So we pan from...
If only it happened more quickly and more interestingly, but oh well.
Yeah. So we pan from Kimberly on the beach house deck to Michael inside. He actually did, as promised, sleep on the couch and apparently did not even take his jeans off and sleep in his boxers. So he must be in love. But when he rolls over and sees Kimberly in her slip nightie, he rushes out to wrap her in his blanket and bring her inside. She shakes off his concerns. She feels fine because of him. And as he dispenses her pills, he suggests that they figure out a schedule for his visits. Instead of the early dinners that he offers, she would rather that he come at night. And he immediately agrees without talking to his current wife. And as he tries to hustle out, Kimberly says that waking up with him there felt right, like in the old days when their relationship was good. When was that? And Michael's like, cool, bye. And when he walks out to his car, Megan is there, and she's done being the Gone Girl style cool girl, clip two.
We forgot about the life and adventures of Nicholas Dickerby.
Okay.
What, did something happen?
Yes, I had the worst night's sleep of my life.
Wait, call me crazy, but I thought you were okay with this. It wasn't 12 hours ago you brought over chicken soup.
Yeah, well, I changed my mind somewhere around midnight when I realized that you weren't in bed with me.
Megan, I really can't talk about this
now. What, now I can't even talk to my own husband? Look, I'm sorry about Kimberly's condition. I really am. But we're newlyweds. We should be together.
And we will be soon.
When? Tonight? Should I make dinner?
No. Actually, you better order in. I'm going to be spending nights here until Kimberly passes on.
Doing what? Sleeping with her? Holding her?
No, just being here. Look, I know this isn't a great way to start off our marriage. But, I mean, if I didn't do it this way, then I couldn't live with myself.
This is unbelievable.
Look, Megan, if it wasn't for Kimberly, we wouldn't have gotten together. I mean, you owe her this much. We both do. So look, I gotta get back to the office, so I'll I'll see you tonight, and maybe we can eat while I'm packing.
Yeah, won't that be fun?
Oh, no. This has already gotten off the rails as we're all just in our chat texting alternate dirty Charles Dickens titles to each other.
Well, now you got to read them.
Okay. The Dickwick Papers, that's by Sarah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dave offered Little Do It. And I came up with The Mystery of Edwin Choad and Martin Guzzleshit. I'm sorry, but not that sorry.
Yeah.
After Michael has left and Megan is still...
Not Jizzlewit?
Okay, yeah, that's better.
Oh, no.
Or Guzzle Tit. That's also an option.
Yeah. Well, that's the Nuzzle Tale of Tit? Two Titties.
Nuzzle Tit.
Nuzzle Tit. Yeah, no. Tale of Two Titties. Uh-huh.
Listeners, we're sorry, but the show literally started it.
They insisted. Yeah.
After Michael has left, and Megan's still standing on the stairs for some reason, Kimberly comes out to ask how she is, and Megan snits that she's been better. Kimberly thanks her for sharing Michael, and Megan just glares and leaves, and Kimberly looks smug some more, which you can see in the visual aids. That night, Megan resets the situation for new viewers. Michael is moving out to live with his ex-wife when he and his current wife haven't even fucked since their wedding night. Michael's like, she's dying, and Megan's like, I definitely know. And Michael's pretty sure Kimberly's only going to live a few more weeks, max, and Megan can live with the current situation that long, right? He's ready to bone down now and tie them both over, but then the phone rings. Obviously, it's Kimberly calling to tell him about a nightmare she just had about waking up in her own coffin. So can he come over right now? He can. He apologizes to Megan on his way out, but like, Kimberly lives in Malibu. There's no convenient way to get there. You definitely have time to bang out a quickie and claim traffic. She actually lives in Oxnard. That's where the house is, which is even further. But anyway, the next morning, in the least predictable development imaginable, Michael brings Kimberly to church. She says she's already tried that, but Michael has experienced praying for sick family members and reminds her how they've seen prayer help their patients in the past. But then the doors open and pallbearers come out with a coffin, and Michael's like, oops. Like, I think he literally says it. Kimberly.
I mean, he does. I'm surprised both of them didn't burst into flames anyway. Like, this is a terrible idea.
Truly.
Especially since I think that's the church where everyone never gets married on 90210. Right?
Oh, maybe.
Is that the same exterior?
It's not the same one that we usually see on Melrose. Like, it's not the one where, what's his face? The soap star was going to get married. Alan. It's not that one. It's a different
right.
one. Kimberly gasps that it's a sign and orders Michael to take her home. And sometime later, he's in bed with Megan, stammering that he's too distracted to fuck her. She is determined to put him in the mood, but he gets out of bed, saying he's already been at Megan's too long. She whines that Michael could hire a nurse, which kicks off the same argument from their last scene, except this time when Megan presses her point. Clip 3.
And I'm sick of poor, dying, guilt-instilling Kimberly.
Oh, Megan, shut up, will ya?
Listen, she may be dying physically, okay, but I'm dying emotionally, and you're the one who's killing me.
Look, if you want to argue about this, it's going to have to wait, because I really got to go now.
Don't you dare walk out of here!
What the hell are you doing?
Look, I swear you walk out that door and I won't be here when you get back.
Megan, damn it, what do you want from me?
I want you to spend the night. I want you to make love to me like I mean something to you.
So this time he flings the phone off the hook. And at the beach house, Kimberly looks rough before hanging up, pouring herself a handful of pills, swooning in double vision, and then calling 911 for an ambulance and falling glassy-eyed onto the floor. And the next morning, Michael checks on her in the hospital. Some unnamed person called him at the practice to tell him that she had been admitted. She sadly says she had a seizure and that when she had tried to reach him at Megan's, the phone kept ringing. Like, I don't know, man. Try his pager. He's a doctor. She can go home, but she'll have to stay on top of her meds. And she passive-aggressively adds that she got behind the day before because Michael wasn't there to remind her. And again, I don't know, man, you're also a doctor. Be responsible for your damn self. And then she asks if he was at Megan's when she called and were they fucking. And Michael is sorry he missed her, but like, he and Megan are involved. That's all he can say because they're still secretly married. And Kimberly says this, clip 4.
Michael, you don't understand. I can't cheer you anymore, not physically. It has to stop. As long as I'm alive, I don't want you to have sex with her.
What?
I mean, it's not like you owe it to her. You're not married or anything.
Yeah, but I mean, look, that just doesn't seem possible.
Michael, it has to be. I can't go through another night. Last night, all I could think about was you holding her, kissing her, and making love to her.
Please don't.
Can't you see that's what brought on my seizure? To me, you won't sleep with her until after I'm gone.
All right. I swear.
Oh, dear.
Wasn't it Kimberly's idea for them to go to Vegas and get married, though? It was, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Back up to the church thing. It is the same church from where Abby and Bill did not get married on 90210. Yes. So well spotted,
thought
Sarah.
So.
Back to this episode. Speaking of fucking, some number of days later, Megan appears at the office to try to fuck Michael in the middle of the morning. Bitch, make an appointment like everyone else. When Michael puts Megan off, she demands to know why, and he tells her about his promise, and she is not happy and asks what she is supposed to do until Kimberly dies. Let's play the next clip.
Well, you could try to be understanding, and maybe you could take care of yourself.
Okay. I mean, again, in terms of take responsibility, Megan. But
yeah.
She yells that she married Michael, not a vibrator. A vibrator would be more reliable, to be honest, but I guess I take her point.
Yeah.
Sometime even later, Megan visits Kimberly on the deck of the beach house and pretends to be nice. Kimberly enthuses about how great Michael's been and then asks why Megan stopped by. And Megan's like, we're friends, aren't we? And Kimberly's like, totally. Megan seeming less nice adds that she's done everything Kimberly has asked. So why would Kimberly ask Michael not to fuck Megan? Kimberly knows it's selfish, but she wants Michael for herself. And Megan says Michael belongs to her and is just visiting Kimberly. And putting her engagement ring back on, Megan says she's sorry Kimberly's dying, but Kimberly has to know. And then Michael materializes to stop Megan, covering her finger with his, which you can see in the visual aids. It's quite obvious, and saying Kimberly needs a rest. And then a distraught Kimberly calls Michael into the bedroom where she is apparently naked under the covers, but he doesn't seem to notice, so she has to tell him she wants him, like, wants him. And Michael stammers that they're divorced and that Kimberly probably isn't even up for having sex. Is she? She wants him to make love to her and make her feel alive one last time, and Michael lives to serve. What a champ. And that's where we leave these two for now. Anything
putting
to add?
Putting the hoe back in hospice, it's Michael.
That's right. Before we move on to our A plot, we also have Porna B. Rudge and our mutual friend with benefits. Now, our A plot. The joy from Peter and Amanda's career wins is short-lived. Nick is still a pain in Taylor's ass. And things still suck for Sydney and Allison. Peter is scrubbing for surgery when he gets paged for a call and asks Matt to pick it up for him. And this is what Sarah was referring to in the previous call-in episode about Matt literally being there to hold doors and phones, because here it is. And Matt makes a bitchy face about it while doing so. Like, do you understand how maintaining a sterile field works, Matt? But anyway, it's Amanda calling to talk about filing her income taxes with Peter jointly this year. Peter is cockily excited to see Amanda for any reason, so she clarifies it's not a date. And Peter tells Amanda to wait, not hearing her say she has a meeting, as he gets called away so that Dr. Shulman can introduce him to Dr. Jonathan Goldberg, a.k.a. Robert the Gay Guy from the Melrose Place episode of Seinfeld called The Beard. Goldberg is the new chief of staff, and although Peter is friendly meeting him, Goldberg makes sure to say he knows Peter was his runner-up, so it's fortunate for our boy Peter that he has an excuse to refuse Goldberg's handshake. Matt leaps in to give Goldberg a vigorous shake while Peter looks irritated. What is with you two today? So bitchy for no reason. Before moving on, Goldberg sniffs that he hopes Peter isn't in the habit of leaving patients waiting while he takes personal calls. Cool boss alert. And when Peter returns to the phone, Amanda has hung up and gone to her meeting. Over to the McBrides, where Nick drinks the last of the milk directly from the jug and tells Taylor to get more. She says her place is not a hotel, but before they can fight about it more, Kyle enters and gives Nick yet another opportunity to lord something over Taylor. Clip 5.
Tell your wife about our plans yet? Oh, yes. Do tell, Kyle.
What, you got to promise not to get bent out of shape, right? Just, I haven't had a day off since the restaurant opened, and Nick and I got to talking about that. We figured we ought to take in the town, you know? I mean, the only thing I have seen of L.A. so far is the inside of my kitchen.
And you're absolutely right, baby. You have been working too hard. Let's get in the car and drive up the coast and see the sights. No, what do you say?
Sweetheart, I'm not talking about sightseeing. I'm talking about hitting the town. Well, carousing. Ah. A guy thing.
Just the two of you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have had plenty of nights off to do your thing.
Yeah, and it's only fair that your hubby gets to have some fun, too.
Fine, so take the night off.
Please, you couldn't say no. Dibs on the first shower.
Okay. I will be good, baby. I promise.
Fact check.
None of this tracks with reality. Like, Nick is such a jackass. Like, there's... I don't know. I don't understand why he and Kyle continue to know each other. I don't understand why Taylor isn't like, I'm getting a hotel until you figure it out, if not forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know it's a soap opera, but there's so much shit in this episode and this season that's like, I don't know why this is happening except to create needless obstacles. But if it is going to happen, can we hurry up?
Yeah. The thing about
Nick sucks.
He does, but like what we've seen of Kyle, he kind of also sucks. Like the first fact that we learn about him is that he fucked around on Taylor. And the second fact we learn about him is that Taylor was like messed up about Peter and Kyle like took her out of her family in some undefined way. Like he, you know, made that reference to like, you were just a gawky kid when I met you and whatever, you know? So it's like nothing has been established about Kyle to justify whatever is going on with Nick, which is what makes it so sketchy, where it's like, if you want to hang out with Nick and, like, you know, touch butts all the time, like, you didn't have to be married. You could have done that. Like, I don't think there's actually anything sexual between them because, you know, it's the mid-90s. Like, we've established, you know, compulsory heterosexuality is the thing. But, like, we also don't know why Nick is trying to get between Kyle and Taylor. Like, none of this has been established to my satisfaction. So I agree.
Well, and is there some kind of like Three Kings situation where they robbed an Air Force PX or something? Like, I don't. And also, even if there is, I don't care because this is bad casting. Like, this actor is not interesting. Moving along.
Right. Well, the other thing is like, we also just watched him in Co-Ed Call Girl, like being a rapist, basically, for which we talked about in Again with This, episode 100. So that's part of it too, where like you still see, you see that guy shining through this guy. And I don't really like either of them. So that's also part of it. But, you know, at the same time, the show also seems to make us want to take Taylor's side over Nick's. And like, I kind of do because he seems weird, but she's also weird. Like all of this is bad.
Like, I guess Kyle's type is creeps.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, at Sydney's, Sam follows Sydney to the door as Sydney hangs a sign with their new hours, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week, which, no offense, but you weren't open this much already? I mean, open at noon on Sundays, but whatever. Sydney intends to work Monday to Friday, 10 to 5, and expects Sam to do the same, plus all nights and weekends, which, okay, first of all, someone has to be there before the door opens. I have not worked retail much, but I know that. And second, that schedule for Sam is not legal, and Sam has a lawyer on call now. So anyway, things are not great at home either. Clip six.
Between this and your so-called kitchen usage hours that you sprung on me this morning in the apartment. What can I say? I'm a schedule person. Oh, you couldn't schedule your own heartbeat. No, you're trying to get me to move out and quit my job. Well, there is that. Why? Why do you go to all this trouble to make my life a living hell? I mean, also, you can have Jane's apartment to yourself. Come on, it's nice, but it's not that nice.
At this point, it's a matter of principle.
Like, you know the meaning of the word.
You know, insulting me will only make matters worse. So if you'll excuse me, I have a very important phone call to make.
Nothing you say, do, or schedule is going to work, Sid. I'm not leaving.
You should have quit 5 months ago, idiot. We've been saying that for weeks and weeks and weeks. Actually, months.
Yeah. Get away from this family.
Yeah. Well, that's A. B, when she's like, Jane's apartment is nice, but it's not that nice. Like, yeah, Sydney had a one bedroom upstairs, as we recently learned for our sister podcast, Extra Hot Great, where we talked about frogging Cole and Hyder in my house. Mm-hmm. Ground floor apartments are a break-in hazard. Like, granted, it's not that much harder to get into Sydney's place because she's just, you know, up a spiral flight of stairs. But still, that's like possibly enough of a deterrent to someone who's going to bust in and try on her clothes, you know.
Yeah.
At best.
Also, it's just in that complex with all the fighting, it's just a lot quieter.
Yeah, true. Anyway, Sydney ignores Sam to go call Carter's private line, which Walter picks up. She demands to speak to Carter, but he happens to be sitting next to Walter, and when Walter tells him who's calling, he mopily refuses to take it. And Sydney figures out that Walter has brainwashed Carter and bleats that he's not going to get away with it. And apparently Carter can hear enough of Sydney to hang up the call, tells Walter to change his private number, and Walter's ready to go further. Clip 7.
Why don't we just disconnect the phone? You don't really need a private line.
No, of course not. Because I'm not allowed to have a private life. It doesn't fit into my schedule. Right, Walter?
Oh, boo-hoo! Who cares?
I also, like, from our vantage point in 2022, when, like, tech CEOs are, like, some of the most evil people on Earth, it's very funny to see this portrayal of, like, poor Carter, this, like, childlike genius who has to be managed by all the baddies at his company. Anyway, in Peter's office at the practice that night, Amanda and Peter go over receipts, and we learn that Peter is just as much a tax cheat as he was when he lost his house. Clip 8.
The Santa Barbara Bayside Resort. Think we can ride off the honeymoon?
I mean, I think he thinks he does. Rather. He then pauses the tax talk to say he misses her. Amanda has just spent their separation working. He asks if that means lots of time with Craig, but she says he has barely been at the office since his father, as she puts it, croaked. In front of her, by the way. Like, I know they weren't friends, but, like, have a tidy amount of respect. Like, Jesus.
I mean, he basically, like, tried to anti-Title IX her out of a job multiple times, so I'm fine with it. Also, my dad said that my grandmother croaked the day after it happened. That was his mom.
All right, so, fair enough.
Yeah.
May they both rest. To Peter's follow-up, Amanda does not deny that Craig has a thing for her, but she's using it to get something she wants from him, not what Peter thinks, bigger than a promotion, has kind of a distasteful side to it. Well, she's probably said enough and should head out.
This storyline is so frustrating to me. They have such adorable chemistry in the scene. And it's like, why are you apart? Like, again, I understand why. Mm-hmm. I have watched a soap opera before.
Yes.
But they're just like, they're so cute. She especially is like, I don't know, like very sweet and like girly and flirty in this scene. And it's like, I just don't buy that. Never mind that they would be separated, but that she would not tell him, like, at least part of the scheme.
Yeah.
And he's looking really foxy. He's got, like, the retro Demi Frisco mullet. Ugh, yeah. It's just so frustrating. They belong together. Show. Hear my cry.
It's true. And it's a shame that, like, one of the things, again, that we said in the call-in episode was, like, it's a pity that 90210 used good actors for, like, nothing or bad one-off shots. And I feel the same about these two, where it's like, they're on a show where no one can be happy for long, just because, as you said, the nature of the show. And it's a shame that, like, they never got the chance to be, like, coach and Mrs. Coach, or, like, heart to heart 98 or something, like, where, you know, they could have played a different kind of married couple who, like, just got to be, you know, have this cute Nick and Nora energy versus being on here where, like, you know, dumb impediments have to be set up in order to keep them apart for, you know, plot purposes that no one believes.
Yeah, it is a waste.
Over to Shooters, where Nick and Kyle are shooting pool, and Nick is annoying a female server by hitting on her for both of them. Kyle reminds Nick that he's married, but Nick knows he told Kyle not to marry Taylor. Kyle says it sucks when your wife and your best friend don't get along. And Nick takes the opening to ask how the marriage is going because, in his opinion, Taylor seems distracted. Before Kyle can answer, he hits another patron with his cue by mistake and spills beer all over him. And Kyle offers to give the guy a few dollars for another beer, but Nick isn't having it. Clip 9.
Yeah. Hey, don't give this freak any money.
Come on, Nick, it's okay. I bumped into him.
That's right. Oh, what's to say he didn't bump into you?
Nick, I got a cover.
Listen, pond scum, this man is my best friend. I ain't gonna let you hustle.
Well, your best friend's a jerk who owes me a beer. Oh, don't say that.
What do you say to me?
I said your best friend's a jerk. God, come on, Nick. Why'd you do that?
He insulted you.
My favorite part of this clip was that the beginning of it, I had to try and transcribe the noise Nick makes to, like, try to overrule Kyle. So
you
Dave,
did an excellent job.
Thank you. Dave, can you play just the very, very beginning of that clip one more time?
Yeah. Don't give this freak any money.
It's okay. I bumped into him.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, what's the show? So I have it H-U-R-R-U-R-R-U-R-R-U-H, which I think is basically it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's all. Yeah. A mini brawl ensues, and amid the destruction, there's a gala committee placement. You can see the visual aids. When a patron gets thrown headfirst into the jukebox, they claim, you'll notice the dartboard hanging above. The shape surrounding the bullseye represents a woman's head, and what numbers reside at the end of the two red fields emanating from the woman's head? It's 18 and 49, which just so happens to be Melrose Place's key demographic, women aged 18 to 49. That is one of the subtler ones. I really had to look for it. You'll see it in the visual aids to see like the dartboard with the one from their website superimposed. Because it's hard to see, but you know, I guess.
I was wondering if maybe that wasn't, because once I saw that in our rundown doc, I was wondering if that wasn't why this brawl felt very stagey, that it was like beat extra throws. Popcorn or goldfish or whatever. Beat guy, like he's supposed to be like swinging wildly and knocking out the lights over the pool table, but he's obviously aiming at the lights and there's like a huge explosion like the end of The Natural and it's like, why is this?
Yeah.
Why was this the big budget line item?
Yeah.
This brawl, which you see almost no aftermath of in Shooters, but anyway.
Well, I think that's part of it. And the other part is to set up like why Kyle and Jake start to have a relationship, which we'll see later. That's part of it as well. But the other thing that you can see in the shot in the visual aids with the dartboard is Rob Estes' stunt double, who I will point to. And it's very obviously not him.
Bruce.
That night, Billy and Sam pop by Jake and Allison's. Billy has brought cigars, another gala committee placement. This is from their website. These aren't regular smokes, they're Cubans. This artwork appears to be a normal cigar box. Upon closer inspection, one notices the box's brass hinges are shaped like naval gunboats. The hinges are on all four sides of the box, making it impossible to open, a reference to the U.S. embargo against Cuba. And at first I was like, that's really subtle. But then when I saw the scene, like Jake kind of tosses it in his hand, so you actually can see the hinges are on all four sides.
Oh.
But, you know, you wouldn't know unless you knew. It's kind of cool.
Right. Yeah, that is cool.
Sam's happy to come celebrate the baby, but they're celebrating something else as well, as Allison looks as anxious and unhappy as she has for the past 15 episodes. Jake asks Billy and Sam to be their witnesses at their wedding. It'll just be a city hall service. And if Allison's expression was because she was worried about her ex being heard about this, Billy's expression does not bear that out at all. Another classic wrong face from Andrew Hsu. Jake goes on, clip 10.
Anyway, since you're one of our oldest friends and Sam has gotten so close with Allison, we couldn't think of two people we'd rather have stand up for us.
Okay. Sam started getting so close to Allison in episode 15 when they fucking ran into each other at the drugstore. Like, literally... That was 3 episodes ago. It would make more sense for Allison to have Amanda as maid of honor, despite all the shit those two have gone through, especially given what happens at the rest through the rest of the episode. This is fucking bullshit. But of course, Billy and Sam accept. Allison continues looking conflicted, and Billy continues looking like he just met her. And you will see this in the visual aids.
Yep. Like he's got poppy seed at the gum line face.
Oh, God. Sure. He's so bad. The next morning, we're at the jail as Kyle is walked out of his cell, bitching when he sees Taylor that she took too long to bail him out. He wants to know where Nick is, and duh, she says Nick is on his own, and maybe jail is the right place for someone who settles most disagreements with his fists. Kyle tells her not to jump to conclusions, even though that is exactly what happened, mm-hmm. as she confirms by asking who threw the first punch and surmising the truth from Kyle's silence. Kyle demands her checkbook, but if he's going to bail Nick out, he can use his own money, which seems fair. Over to Field Manor, where Amanda has been summoned to find Craig day drinking in his dad's study. She tells him he should come back to the office, but he ignores that, telling her she's beautiful. Amanda did not drive across town for a worthless compliment, so can they talk about work? D&D doesn't matter anymore to either of them, says Craig. He is about to inherit a lot of money. He's not trying to make an indecent proposal. He just wants him and Amanda to be more intimately involved. Clip 11.
A, that is really sick. And B, I'm a married woman.
Yeah, we really need to do something about that. But even so, I don't consider it an obstacle in our relationship.
You are a kid.
Maybe, but a very rich kid these days. I mean, let's face it. You're willing to leave D&D for a mere $5 million? I'm offering you a hell of a lot more than that. Love. Financial security. Good sex.
Listen and learn, Junior. My relationships are based on love, not dollar signs. And for the record, I doubt the sex would be that good.
I mean, same.
Agree. Yeah.
I feel like,
sorry.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
The next night, Billy returns to Jake's place with a gift for Allison. It's a mobile to keep the kid occupied so you don't go totally insane. This is also another gala committee placement. They really went all out for this double episode. And from their website, it says, the mobile represents a TV remote control. Need a babysitter for your kids? Try television. I mean, they're being sarcastic. I agree. When you see this in the visual aids, it could also be a phone keypad or a calculator, but sure, not their best, in my opinion. Anyway, after Allison has enthused about the gift, Billy evinces emotional intelligence that Andrew Shue's acting in this episode did not previously suggest he has. Clip 12.
Are you having second thoughts? I mean, I know what you went through before, you know, when we almost got married.
Billy, this isn't even remotely the same situation. And I have to get married this time. This isn't a matter of choice.
Yeah, well, all I'm saying is that it would have been nice if you had been honest with me before our wedding. You know, it would have saved us a lot of embarrassment.
This isn't about you or us. This is about me and Jake.
I realize that. That's why I'm trying to tell you as a friend that he deserves a little honesty if you are on the fence.
Well, I'm not on the fence. And I'm not going out any windows. And you know, really, Billy, it's not your place to be worried if I do.
Fine. That's all I wanted to hear. Well, I guess it's on to City Hall. Have a good night.
This is so bad for so many reasons. Like, in addition to what I said, setting it up, which is nothing that Andrew Shue has performed so far suggests that he had this in him.
Yeah.
But it's also not the same situation because last time she was dealing with recovered trauma about her father's sexual abuse. And every time this comes up, we say this, like, Billy has just never acknowledged what the underlying cause was of their wedding not happening.
Yeah. Like, and saving us a lot of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Not the point.
At all. Not at all the point. And, like, the other thing is, like, the writing of them this whole season has not built a foundation for him, like, reaching out to her this way.
No.
Like, the start of this season, he was trying to get back with her.
Yeah, and that went on for a while.
Yeah, it did.
So,
anyway, at Kyle's, Taylor tells Kyle that they're having a slow night, which gives him more time to go fuck around at the bar with his jail buddy. Peter walks in, but immediately loses his appetite when he sees Goldberg and Shulman are already there dining together. And he's on his way out when Taylor stops him to say she heard he got a new place at the beach. Of course, at the marina, actually, where all the divorced men go. She's only seen the ocean once since she moved to L.A., so maybe she should come by one time. And he gives her a maybe. Back to the bar where Kyle calls Jake to say he'll pay for the damage that he and Nick caused the previous night and offer to host Jake's bachelor party, which completely erases all of Jake's irritation at the probably tens of thousands of dollars of damage that was done, like, to the jukebox alone, honestly.
I was just going to say, that jukebox alone, $8,000 to $10,000. Like, okay.
For real. After Goldberg and Shulman leave, a server tells Taylor that Shulman left her credit card, so Taylor goes after them to return it and catches them making out in the parking lot. Goldberg croons that he wants to thank Shulman for his job. She did it for purely selfish reasons to get him away from his wife. Oh my, Dr. Shulman, how could you?
Also, totally out of character for Shulman as written to date, but okay.
Sure. The next day, Peter is surprised to see Taylor at his door. Conveniently for Taylor, Amanda put Peter's new address on the mailbox at the complex, and she just went ahead and wrote it down, because as previously discussed, she's a creep.
Creep, yeah.
Taylor assures Peter that she's not there to seduce him. It's to tell him about the scandalous parking lot scene, and Peter distractedly thanks her for the intel and hustles her out. Over to D&D, where Craig ushers family friend Jamie Chun in to meet Amanda. Jamie is a top divorce lawyer. Amanda beamingly asks Jamie to excuse them and then yells at Craig about his arrogance. Unfazed, he says he's willing to share his fortune with Amanda if she will just make herself legally and physically available. Clip 13.
So you're figuring on having this huge fortune, are you?
Hey, I'm the only child. Who else is my father going to leave his money to?
Who else indeed?
What could go wrong for Craig?
What could possibly go wrong? Craig, an idiot, does not pick up on this hint at all, asking Amanda if she's going to call Jamie. Amanda's like, maybe. Over to a hospital locker room where Peter walks in on Dr. Shulman changing. I do not love this scene, I have to say.
I hate this scene.
It's bad.
It is a felony what is happening.
Yeah, he continues advancing on her in her current state of undress, even after she, more nicely than he deserves, tells him that he's in the ladies' room. But anyway, he confronts her about Taylor's story by suggesting that if he and Dr. Shulman got to know each other better, he could get a big job too. And things get worse as he ignores her second request that he leave, snaps her bra strap, and continues advancing on her as she backs away. This is all very bad. Very bad for his character.
Yeah, it's bad. And she's doing a good job of looking afraid, but like...
Yeah.
I kind of wish the actor hadn't played it like that. This is just so... Ugh. No. Yeah. Why? There's so many other ways they could have done this. Anyway.
Yes, there are. Like, without selling out Peter's character, we say about someone who, as we've already also continue mentioning that show's forgotten, tried to kill his current estranged wife.
Yeah, and also is an identity thief and possible mercy killer, like and he kind of has a mullet right now. There's a lot going on.
There is. Let's move past this as quickly as we can.
Yes.
The exchange ends in his threat to expose Shulman's affair to the administration. That night at Kyle's, we see that Kyle's promised bachelor party is one table in the restaurant that he did not shut down. Said table is occupied by Jake, Matt, Billy, and also Nick, whom Jake has definitely never met before. And Kyle himself, who possibly spoke to Jake for the very first time when he called to apologize for busting up Jake's business. Cool party.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Where's Tony Marchette's bodyguard? Just round out the list of randos.
I mean, that guy seemed like fun.
He seemed nice to some shit. You get a couple nice scotches in that guy, he's going to tell you some shit, for sure.
That's right. Anyway, Jake's very dear friend Kyle decides to offer a toast. Clip 14.
Okay, wait. Now I'm going to offer some hard-earned, top-secret words of advice about women to him. Actually, to everybody here who it applies to, which I guess would exclude you, man.
Hey, some of my best friends are women.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Nothing about women from you. Okay? Go ahead.
Some of my best friends
dress like women. Come on.
You can barely hear it at the end of that clip, but that's Matt defending himself by saying some of his friends dress like women, which, fine. Ha ha.
I mean, also, the line delivery... Like, it made me laugh. Poor Savage, just trying to exist at this school and basically failing. But yeah, that was not bad.
It's true. But also, this show would be so much better if we ever had any evidence that Matt was cool enough to be friends with drag queens. Like, oh, we God. Don't. I wish.
Or if we just saw them instead.
Yeah. True. Anyway, toast continues. Clip 15.
Right.
McBride's three rules of keeping a woman happy. Number one, always tell her she looks great, whether she does or not. Okay, good. Number two, never, and I repeat, never forget her birthday or your anniversary.
So you marry her on her birthday.
Sure. And rule number three, now this is rule number three. Never put her in the position of having to bail your ass out of jail.
Yeah, she's going to do it. That's why she would bail me out of jail.
Could you frat boys keep it down?
Wait a minute,
customers?
Buffy,
you look great.
Thanks.
Happy birthday.
Keep it till the customers are complaining.
Yes, you know what? I guess we should chill a little. This is a place of business.
Exactly. And you happen to own half of it, so maybe you could be so kind to come in the kitchen and help out.
Well, I'm sorry, sweetheart. You know,
she's kinda
duty does call. Excuse me.
No, come on. No, no. Sit down with your pals. I've got you covered. Don't worry about it. Come on. After you, ma'am.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. When did she get that wet?
Well,
okay. Some ad-libs in the scene are better than others. I don't care for that one, but
no.
Jake calling Taylor Buffy is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Also, marry on her birthday. Like, okay, fine. That's about what Andrew Hsu is up for, and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And her, like, breaking up, like, because they're just being such dorks.
They're
being like, oh, just get in the kitchen. Yeah, I don't know. Every now and then, it's like, oh...
Mm-hmm.
The show could actually be legit good and not just soap good. And
yep,
it's not even soap good lately. So
it's true. In the kitchen, Buffy/Taylor is not grateful for Nick's help, and he is half-assed in providing it, just standing there while picking a fight with her, claiming that she hates him because he sees through her. Specifically, he saw her melting when Peter came in the other night, and when she tries to stomp out on the conversation, he blocks her path to point out the irony in her holding Kyle's affair over his head, given that she is clearly horny for Peter. And when he threatens to tell Kyle about that, she calls him Cato and counter threatens to have him fired, which, since when does he work there? When we saw him behind the bar before, I thought he was just hanging out. But before she can leave the kitchen, Nick adds the killing blow. He always liked that waitress that Kyle boned, and she glares at him but doesn't really have anything to say. Sad. Back at the table, Jake is showing a photo of the house he wants to buy, and we learn that it's north of Ventura near Kester, a real location. It is not in Tarzana, as Sarah had surmised last time. It's in Sherman Oaks, which is also in the valley, so you weren't far off. It is.
I just picked a town name. So.
No, but you were right, or you were close. It's a short walk to the Sherman Oaks Galleria and a Whole Foods. The median price there for a three-bedroom in 1996 was $231,000.
Wow.
Today, do you want to guess?
1.4.
Oh, my God, Sarah, it's 1.5. You're real good at this.
I mean,
it's like you're married to a real estate agent or something.
It's a gift. What can I say? Madam Bunsky looks into her real estate crystal ball. That
not
is
bad.
Crazy.
Yeah.
How big did you say?
I just guessed three bedroom.
No. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because the house that we saw, it was hard to tell. I mean, I'm sure that the location that they shot was not actually there. Like, this Ventura north of Kester is like a neighborhood. This house was just like, it looked like it was on a giant lot. So I'm sure that's not really
down.
Where it was. Yeah, yeah. This is in Santa Clarita somewhere. But anyway, this is also when we find out via Billy's question that Jake has now secretly put a down payment on the house, but he plans to surprise Allison with the news as a wedding present. Billy notes that Allison does not love surprises. So Jake decides now is the time to ask this. Clip 16.
Do you have a problem with me and Austin getting married, I mean, I would understand it.
No, no.
Then what are you getting at? Do you know something I don't know?
No, I'm totally happy for you guys. But come on, bottoms up.
Okay.
Actually, he does know something that you don't know. He's not able to express it because it's Andrew Hsu, but like, don't do that.
Yeah.
What do you think marriage is going to be like when you actually have to clear these decisions? Ugh, fucking Jake.
Yeah. While Billy is out with Jake, Sam is at home in the one-bedroom apartment she shares with the boss who hates her. Said boss comes to the living room to turn off Sam's boring classical music and play a rock song on a competing stereo. So then Sam turns off Sydney's stereo and puts hers back on. So Sydney turns her on as well as Sam's, then tells Sam her kitchen privileges are over for the day and not to use Sydney's mug. So Sam drops the mug she's holding and it breaks. So Sydney takes Sam's painting off the wall and prepares to vandalize it. So while yanking it back and forth, they put a hole in the canvas and then have to answer the door to an angry Amanda telling them both to shut the fuck up. And after she has left, Sydney turns her stereo back on and Sam runs after Amanda to a whine that she can't take it anymore. Per Amanda, Sam is free to drown Sydney in the bathtub if she does it quietly. And it's at this point that Billy returns, pointing out to Sam how crazy her threats against Sydney sound. And Sydney snaps out of it and agrees. And Billy then finally gets around to inviting her to move in with him. And Sam mopes that she can't just because she hates her roommate. The real answer is, I can't move in with you because I have no idea what preposterous terms my landlord will overreach with in your unit. But Billy replies that Sam should move in with him because she loves him. And a nauseating exchange ensues in which they eventually trade I love yous and no one cares because these two are the boring worst. Then Amanda meets Craig on the yacht he's considering buying and has brought contracts. She's into his offer but needs a sign of good faith on his part before she decides anything. Over to the courtyard where the members of the Parker Hansen wedding party are waiting their turn for wedded bliss. Allison needs to run to the can first, and without being asked, Sam follows her as Allison catches her breath. Sam asks if it's the baby, but Allison mutters that she doesn't think she can do this. Sam, clip 17.
Do what? Get married?
Oh, I was afraid of that. Billy told me about your escape at you guys' wedding.
Oh my God. We already dislike her. You don't also have to have her say you guys' on top of everything else.
Yeah. Oh. And also, she didn't escape from trauma from being molested.
Yeah. Anyway, Sam adds that there aren't any windows in the bathroom, and instead of being insulted, Allison laughs. Okay. Allison doesn't know why she can't do this. And in the hallway, Billy and Jake are pacing. It's been 10 minutes, so Billy reminds Jake that Allison had trouble at her last wedding too. And Jake says, clip 18.
What is it? You think I've been jilted?
I love this tone. Jake is like, you think I suck as much as you? Like, that's what is insulting him. Billy yeah, thinks they're on the same level.
It would have been really funny if there had been a callback that was like, well, at least there aren't any, you know, of course not. There aren't any windows in that bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then what also made me laugh during this entire scene was that in another famous bathroom scene with another Allison, there actually was a window the entire time. And it's like, why don't you just go to that bathroom and then you could climb out the window?
That's right.
The fireman will take you home.
However, Billy's question is enough to get Jake to reach the gender-specific door and find Sam and Allison sitting on a bench, unrealistically positioned directly between the stalls and the sinks. And you can see this in the visual aids. Because it infuriated me. Like, that's not where a bench would be. It would be over to the side.
No. You're just going to have people tumbling over it and racking themselves.
Right. Especially in a ladies' room where, like, there's enough of a slowdown as it is. Like, you don't need to have an additional impediment. But then a woman comes out of a stall and, despite there being three witnesses, does not even pretend to wash her hands. And you can see this in the visual aids, too. She, like, just walk the fuck out. Anyway, Jake does not really convince anyone that he is marriage material in clip 19.
Okay, I'll
Allison, let's go.
No, Jake, I just...
No, it's okay. If you're not ready to do this now, we'll just come back another time.
Are you sure? Because I figured you'd just give me a couple of minutes.
I think the best thing for us to do is just go home.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds great. He's not controlling and creepy at all.
And definitely not a fucking fragile baby who makes everything about him.
Right.
Cool.
Back to the boat. Amanda's papers require Craig to sign over half his controlling interest at D&D, which is peanuts for a rich Richie like him. He still wants to know what he would get out of it. Amanda offers the possibility that she might marry him someday. He will need a good faith gesture to that effect, and Amanda's like, cool, pushing him into a chair, straddling his lap, unbuttoning her blouse, and kissing him, putting the papers on her chest to sign them, which she can see in the visual aids. Craig mumbles that he knows what she's doing, but it feels too good to say no. Signature accomplished. Amanda kisses him again, then climbs off his lap and buttons her shirt back up because she said she could maybe have sex with him someday. Not that she would. Bye! Well done. This is scheming at its
legend.
Best. That's right.
Legend.
At the medical practice, Michael does some historical recapping on his relationship timeline with Kimberly before asking if Peter heard this dude Goldberg resigned. Michael figures he was in over his head. They had one conversation and he seemed dumb. And Peter smugly lets Michael ask what else he knows. Clip 20.
Did you hear something different?
Just that they've already appointed his new replacement.
Oh, great. And what bozo did they scrape off the bottom of the floor this time?
This bozo.
No way. You? Oh, man, that's really great. My own partner steals a job right out from underneath me?
Oh, come on, Michael. We both know that you never had a chance.
Oh, yeah, and how is it you did? Doctor almost bankrupt. Doctor couldn't perform surgery till a little while ago. Uh-uh. Something doesn't smell right here.
You forgot? Doctor tried to kill a lady!
Yeah! You were there. You saw that one. But this is also Doctor, he already had this job, and that's what his first scene was.
Yeah.
And his second scene was him telling you that you were on notice for being a fuckstick. Like, come on, guys. Read the show Bible.
Seriously. Peter orders Michael to congratulate him, since this can only help the practice. I'm not sure how he can continue to have a private practice if he's chief of staff of a hospital, but whatever. Michael doesn't think it was a merit promotion, and Peter's like, whatever works. Over to a lecture hall or something where Carter is telling some very bored-looking college students, you can see in the visual aids, about his new game, Atmosphere, F-E-A-R. One kid says he plays it all the time, but he and his friends don't understand what the gatekeeper character represents. Ooh, I think I know this one. Carter says he is just one of many obstacles the hero has to overcome. And the next question comes from Sydney. Doesn't Carter think the gatekeeper is basically evil? Carter stammers that he's just doing his job. Is it his job to keep Orpheus away from his true love? Oh, God, Carter, don't bring Orpheus into whatever this is. But Carter never thought about that. Maybe the gatekeeper has an agenda of his own. Sydney suggests. Another kid asks to move on since no one understands what she's talking about. But Carter thinks he does, finally. And he and Sydney have a meaningful stare. And behind Carter, you can see on the screen like some scenes from the game. And they are, of course, so terrible, but so great. Oh, yeah. The golden age of the CD-ROM game. Take us back.
Reminded me of being at CES in 1996, and it's like, here's a game that was called Lion, and it was basically you watching a lion walking around. There was like not even gameplay. It was just a lion.
Neat.
Yeah.
Over to
Billy's. Very soothing.
I'm sure. Over to Billy's place, which is now also Sam's place. She is excited for a bubble bath after her shitty day. She knows it's the first day of their cohabitation, but would he mind her having a little privacy? Well, he does, because they have a schedule for the bathroom. That's a joke, but not really. And Sam, the doormat, immediately backs down and lets Billy get in the tub with her. Elsewhere, Allison is about to serve dinner while Jake mopes on the couch. Clip 21.
If I didn't say it earlier, I really do appreciate how sensitive you were to my needs this morning.
Well, that's me. A sensitive guy.
Ugh, the look he gives her is so hateful. Fuck off, dude. Like, the idea of, like, using that's me, a sensitive guy, like, okay, it doesn't make you gay to not want to force a woman to marry you, you fucking asshole. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Seriously.
He wants to know what her problem is. Well, the main problem is that the writers are making Allison's motivations completely opaque. But the sub-problem is that when Allison does try to express reservations about his big plans for them, Jake just bulldozes her and she lets him and has been doing so for several episodes about every major decision. Hmm. Yet another problem is that, like Billy, Jake believes Allison owes him something because he's a good guy. And this clip is long, but it's important. Clip 22.
I've given you everything a woman in your situation could possibly want.
My situation?
I'm being responsible. I've done the honorable thing. I even put a down payment on that house in the valley.
What? Even after I told you I wasn't ready to move?
That's another thing. You got this whole anti-family, anti-suburbia thing going on.
That is ridiculous! If I have any qualms about being married, it's not because of that.
Oh, okay. What is it then? Why are you having such a hard time doing the right thing?
I don't know what that is for me.
What are you saying? That you don't think you want to have this baby?
I don't know if I do or if I don't. Right now, I am definitely leaning towards don't. Look, maybe I'm just not equipped to be a mother.
Okay, well, I'll take custody of the baby in the delivery room and then I'll raise him myself.
Oh, I see. So what is right is what you decide is right. It's all about you, isn't it, Jake? It's your ego and your needs and your dreams. Well, it's too bad the baby's inside of me.
Hey, where are you going?
Away from you.
Fucking finally. This, I don't think that we're going to get enough into. I mean, I'm sure the show is not going to try to dig into his whole, like, I'll just take the baby in the delivery room. Like, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's not a solution. Like, this is like those fucking freaks that go to abortion protests and hold up the sign that says, we will adopt your baby. Which, first of all, like, the solution is not forced pregnancy. Like,
yeah.
No, and especially not to, like, when strangers say it, it's one thing, it's also terrible. But when your partner is like, I will take custody of the baby, you just have to incubate it for me. Like, fuck no. Like, Jake clearly has no understanding of all of the things that can go wrong in a pregnancy, irrespective of the fact that all Allison needs to say is, I don't want to be pregnant, and that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
This
was not great at the time, but it's really landing a lot differently post-Row.
Sure is.
And it's so, like, I will say Courtney Thorne Smith is doing a great job sort of not, as a character who's not really able to articulate, like, because of her own upbringing and her experiences in the past, that it's like, there is this sense that Jake is taking care of her, but also she's on a show on Fox, and there are choices that character does not have, which are kind of closer to what actual life would be like in 2022, sadly. So she's actually giving a lot of nuance to her performance and sort of suggesting a lot of the issues that because we actually, you know, paid attention to the show before now, would see with Jake trying to recreate this kind of idyllic idea of the nuclear family in his own head and being the protector and this provider drive, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
None of which is supported by the actual writing.
That's right.
And actually, Grant Cho is doing a good job, too.
I agree. He,
his character is being a twat.
Yes.
But all of that sort of, like, character stuff that we have seen is being brought into the scene by these two actors. They're just sort of hamstrung by the politics of this network.
Right.
And the fact that it's a soap opera and it's like, this is not Everwood, where you are actually going to have a sort of nuanced conversation.
Right.
About it, in which Marcia Cross is on a neighboring set. So, I mean, yeah.
Right, right.
But it's like enormously frustrating
yes.
for him to just be like, it's, you know, why don't you want to do what's right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you don't get to decide that, except, you know, now he does.
Right. I mean, and I'm sure we said this when this came up before, when he brought her to the house. It's like, we know, as you said, like he's got his own trauma that he's not properly dealing with in terms of how he was brought
right.
up. But we also, I think I said at the time, we don't know how much he knows about her life either.
Yeah.
Like it's never been established that he knows her history.
Right.
So that's also.
And certainly Billy is willing always to sell her out for being runaway bride. Ha
right.
ha. What a big joke. How embarrassing.
Yeah. Right.
And not really get into the causes or say that he's sorry.
Yeah.
Like give her condolences.
Right. And the most frustrating part of this is that, I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I doubt that I am, is that there's not going to be a reckoning where Jake is like, that's fucked up what I said. And and I'm sorry that I said it. I wasn't thinking and I didn't think through what I was suggesting. Certainly
yeah.
not in this episode, but I doubt in the rest of the season are we going to see any kind of acknowledgement of like that was another example of rape culture, what I tried to do.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, on this show, like, or on this network, excuse me, like the solution or sort of the unpainting of the characters out of the corner.
Yeah.
Is some kind of pregnancy ending event that is not affirmative on the part of the pregnant person. So like, you know, I don't actually remember how this storyline ends up, but mm-hmm. like someone's going to be fucking around with a crossbow. Like, I mean,
right, right.
You know? So
anyway, back to the scene. Unfortunately for Allison, her only friend is Sam now. So she has to break
God.
In on her and Billy mid bath to announce the wedding is off and she needs a place to stay. Back to the fight. This is also what happens when you're more interested in fucking than you are in finding out if you have common values, which you're totally within your rights to be unless you talk yourself into possibly building a life with someone. Like, this is, again, this was like the hole at the center of their relationship.
Yeah.
As written.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, Sam checks on Allison, still sleeping. Also, by the way, it is a futon, which she has not put down into bed position. Why is everyone so stupid? Sam thinks Billy should talk sense into Jake, but Billy thinks it's Allison's fault for dragging her feet, because of course he does. Sam notes that last night Allison explained how Jake is pushing her, but Billy says he nodded off before the girly talk started. Oh, okay. Then you don't get to have an opinion. Also, suddenly Billy thinks this is all none of their business, which, like, sure. And at the bedroom door, Allison says she appreciates their letting her stay there indefinitely, and Sam has to then tell Billy when he was asleep. Sam said that was the offer. Bitch, you have still not even lived in this place one day. Don't be offering it indefinitely to anyone. Speaking of people overstaying their welcome, Nick wanders through the McBride apartment in time to hear his hosts arguing about how long he's staying. Kyle announces that he and Nick are going out that night and Taylor's not invited, which is fine with her. She will get someone named Mario to cover for them so she can go out and have fun without him. And Kyle throws Peter's name at her on her way out of the room, which Nick is sure to note. Sidebar, tell us everything about this Mario. He is probably having a bad time working at Kyle's.
Yeah. What you need to do is call a locksmith and change the locks on Kyle and Nick.
Yeah.
And yourself, honestly. Both McBrides can kick rocks.
That's true.
We suck.
It's impossible to root for either of them against the other.
Yeah.
They're awful.
It is.
At D&D, Craig cockily invites Amanda into his office, introducing her to Arthur's lawyer as his future significant other. Nothing weird about that. For the reading of Arthur's will, clip 23.
Well, this isn't going to take long.
That's right, I'm my father's sole heir. So, what's my net worth?
Well, that's something you're going to have to calculate yourself, because, Craig, there's no easy way to say this. But your father left everything that he owned, including the mansion, to other relatives.
What relatives? I'm his only child.
Well, see, Marjorie Foster, Joseph Peterson, Alan Field.
These are my cousins, nephews, and nieces. I'm his son.
Well, let's face it, Craig, you weren't exactly on good terms with your father.
Somebody paying you to do this, you bastard? What is this, a scam? My father would never do this to me. I know he wouldn't. And you can bet your ass I'll contest it.
Craig, I know this is upsetting. But your father changed the will 2 weeks ago. I went over it with him myself personally. And it's absolutely ironclad. And unfortunately, quite intentional.
So what does that mean, that I have nothing?
No. You have this company?
Actually, half this company.
You saw this coming, didn't you?
Well, I had my suspicions, but I was hoping your father would rise above his own petty bitterness. Look, why don't we find the nearest bar and I'll buy you a drink?
Yeah, right. So you can get me drunk to cheat me out of the other half of D&D? I'll pass. It's a lot less dangerous getting drunk all by myself.
Oh, that's real sad. Poor guy.
Yeah. Did he really think he was going to get shit all? His father openly hated him.
Yeah. I mean, he spent the whole episode really assuming that he was, but that's a wrap on Craig's dreams.
Guess he's never seen TV before.
No kidding.
We were figuring it out by like minute 8, but okay.
Mm-hmm. So then Peter buys Taylor a cappuccino and thanks her for the help getting him the chief of staff job. And when she asks what Amanda thought about it, Peter admits he hasn't told her yet. Everyone deserves a celebration, Taylor says. She could cook him a great dinner at his place tomorrow. He has plans, but Taylor tells him she'll wait until afterwards, and he accepts for some reason. And at Shooters that night, Billy and Jake argue about the breakup. Billy repeats Allison's statement that she's never loved anyone like she loves Jake, in response to which Jake violates her privacy by telling Billy she doesn't want to have their baby. Clip 25.
This isn't about Allison not wanting to get married. It's about Allison being in denial. And she's going to be a mother whether she likes it or not, and apparently she doesn't.
Yeah, she's not...
Not with that attitude!
Well... Yeah, shit. She's not necessarily going to be a mother whether she likes it or not. What does Jake think this is? 2022. Even Billy manages to look horrified by this, which is saying something.
Uh-huh.
At Billy and Sam's place, Sam nags Allison about her pregnancy plans. Allison is thinking of visiting her sister for a while, and Sam declares that the best case scenario is Allison and Jake making up and getting married, and instead of telling her to mind her own fucking business, Allison says this, clip 26.
I don't know whether to envy your naivete or laugh at it.
Pardon me?
Sam, nothing's as simple as making up and getting married. Not when a relationship's as complicated as Jake's and mine. Maybe if we were like you and Billy.
What the heck is that supposed to mean?
It means you're both simpletons.
Oh my god!
Brain!
We said the same thing!
We hate you guys!
Oh.
That was gross, but awesome. Yeah, I can't believe we both chose the same word.
It's been a while since that happened, certainly on Mike. Oh, the brain. The brain strikes again.
Jesus. Anyway, then Billy comes home and saves Allison from having to answer that question. When he says he was at Shooters, Allison surmises that Sam and Billy are dividing and conquering the situation, and Billy snits that they're trying to be good friends. And I know she's not literally drunk, but the spirit of drunk Allison is back. Clip 27.
If you're my friends, you wouldn't be meddling in my love life. Unless you're concerned about your own love life. It must be terribly inconvenient having a third wheel around when you're so newly...
Fifth wheel.
...blindly in love.
Allison, you don't have to keep insulting us. We're just trying to help you.
Hey, you're welcome to stay as long as you want.
Yeah, well, be out of your hair by this time tomorrow. Thanks for the soup.
Thanks for the soup. What a great kiss-off line.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing, like, that spirit of drunk Allison. You're so right, because it's like, didn't you invite yourself to your ex-fiance and his just moved in girlfriend's house to sleep there, quote, indefinitely, and now you're being a bee?
Mm-hmm.
Don't hate it. Continue.
So in the bathroom, Allison inspects her midriff in profile and sighs. The next morning, Jake comes home as Allison finishes packing for her trip. Paranoid, he accuses her of going to San Francisco for an abortion. What does he think this is? Texas in 2022? She tells him to stop, but also doesn't deny it. And when he pushes, this happens. Clip 28.
I do with my body is none of your business.
This is my baby too, and I'm not gonna let you do that.
What are you gonna do? You gonna tie me to the bed for 9 months? I don't think you
can.
Give me back my suitcase!
What's gonna let you listen to me?
Slap.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you would make such a good mother after all. Don't do this. I told you that I would take the kid, okay? Just have it, and you won't have to do another thing, all right?
This is one decision you can't make for me.
Damn it, if you do this, Allison, I'm never going to forgive you. You hear that? Never! You looking at?
What'd you do to Allison?
I didn't do anything to her. That's what she's going to do to herself. She's going up to San Francisco to have an abortion.
Asshole! Like, we already have a Jesse Vasquez. We do not need another one, especially not one who fixes his fucking bike by the pool.
We super don't. I love that as Amanda walking in on this scene, her reaction
immediately assumes.
Yes, yeah. Correctly. What'd you do to Allison? Like, fuck you. Good job. Way to suss out what's happening. But the end of that is, which you can see in the visual aids, as soon as he says, go to San Francisco and have an abortion, the camera zooms in on Heather Locklear's face in this extremely soapy way that's very funny. But I have to wonder, it's so good, and considering how often the show, like, tries to make Amanda, you know, the bitch, and she, Heather Locklear, overcomes it with her great acting. I just wonder if she asked for a line change on this to be like the hero of the situation, because someone has to be.
I also wonder that, which, I mean, we'll get more into it in a second.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, yes, indeed. Yeah. In fact, right now, because then we're at the airport. And Amanda finds Allison at her gate to say she doesn't think running off to have an abortion is the right thing to do. You better be going somewhere with this counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Allison insists she's only going to visit her sister, and it's not Amanda's business either way. And Amanda knows, but she can relate to Allison's dilemma. Allison remembers Amanda's pregnancy, and I guess the writers want us to know they do too, so good job for watching season one, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda also wasn't sure having a baby with Billy was the right move. Understandable. She never told anyone this, but she had made an appointment for an abortion. She just ended up having a pregnancy loss first. And she winds up by saying she's not pro this or anti that. Yes, heaven forbid politics intrude on the sacred ground of this show. But she just thinks Allison shouldn't act out of anger or fear. So the airline calls Allison's flight. Amanda offers to drive her home and give her back her old job at D&D, but Allison really needs time away from Jake right now, and Amanda kindly hopes Allison can have time on her own to think, which is a fine enough way to end all of that, I think.
Yeah. This speech is fucking both sides-y bullshit. Like, the network just was like this, and it's not like we can go back and change it, but smart to give Heather Locklear the speech, because there's almost nobody else on any show who could have made it palatable and sound sincere, and not like it was writers sort of mealy-mouthing this issue and lecturing the pregnancy haver about her choices, which is like, all right, give it to Locklear. She will figure out how to get the medicine to go down, and she did. And I hope that she asked for a bonus, like a delivery bonus for that, because she should get it.
Yeah,
she bailed it out.
I mean, it is new information that she had made an abortion appointment, because, like, her character was certainly even more of a villain at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So even inserting that and saying, like, I was ready to make that decision and then I didn't have to.
Yeah,
is like, that's something. you know.
Yeah.
So then we're watching Sydney's Sage Jane's old place when Carter knocks on the door. He confronted Walter, who admitted everything. This happened off screen, of course.
Oh, annoying.
Carter feels like an idiot for not believing Sydney, but Sydney is used to that. And even when he did think that Walter's story was true, he still missed her and they kiss. And Sydney assumes Carter will need to rush back to work. But actually, as of today, he doesn't have a business. That's how he puts it. That could mean any number of things, which we never find out, at least not in this episode. So, okay. And he also has a suitcase and says he ran away from his life. Over to the medical practice by night, where Amanda catches Peter in time to give him their tax return and to congratulate him about the chief of staff job, which she has somehow heard about. It means a lot to him that she is proud of him, and he tries to rush her out so he can get to his selection committee thing, but when she asks if spouses are invited, she says she thinks he should attend with his spouse, and then there's slow dancing there. She notices Dr. Shulman glaring at them and asks what her deal is, and he claims she's just sexually frustrated. Amanda can relate. Peter says it's curable, and Amanda gets rattled, noticing that dinner's being served, which reminds him that Taylor's at his apartment right now cooking, and he claims he has to check on a patient. And when he rushes to a payphone, because it's the past, Dr. Shulman storms over to hang it up. She wanted him to know she doesn't think there's anything to cheer about. She hopes he's fine with her being his enemy for life, and he is. And when she's gone, he dials again and gets Taylor, telling her he can't get away, so tonight is off, but he will make it up to her. And then he's walking Amanda home and receiving a tiny peck on the cheek for his troubles. He apparently assumed they would be fucking tonight, but she's not ready for that. And he offers to walk her to her door, but when she says she knows the way, he accuses her of having someone in there that she doesn't want him to see. And she ignores that, so he suggests breakfast the next morning. She accepts, God, finally some progress, even though I know they're both gonna fuck it up. And of course, Taylor was watching the whole thing. And when Amanda gets to her door, she sees that fucking Craig is there. He is drunk and has nowhere to go. And the only thing that would make him feel better is if she had sex with him. Just sidebar, he's been living in the house prior to this point, but like him not having access to it, like kicks in immediately after the reading of the will. Like he has to be out in 24 hours. Not even.
I mean... I'm only an recent probate expert and on New Jersey, but like you got 9 months actually, ironically. So hang out. I mean, maybe, you know, look at some one bedrooms or get
or
a
vandalize
job
the place before you leave to fuck over your cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she shoves him and he hits his head on the wall. She says he's lucky she's not lighting his booze soaked body on fire. God, please do it. Craig protects his head and sadly begs her not to be mean to him. And disgustedly, she lets him inside. And the next morning, a groggy Craig wakes up on the couch. Big episode for couch crashing, by the way.
Yeah.
Michael at the beach house. Mm-hmm. Fucking Nick still on the couch at the McBride's. Mm-hmm. Allison at Billy and Sam's. And now this. Like, all of you people have jobs. Like, get hotels.
Mm.
I mean, Nick doesn't, I guess. Well, no, he does. He has a job at fucking Kyle's.
Kyle's.
Yes. Amanda complains that Craig's snoring kept her up and gives him the TV remote like he's a 4-year-old. She's trying to keep out of her hair, which he kind of is. And Craig hopefully asks whether they had any kind of sex while he was blackout drunk, which they did not. And when he hears the water running in the shower, he creeps to the door she somehow did not lock and is about to step into the bathroom when he hears a knock at the front door, which is, of course, Peter for the breakfast date. And Craig lets him assume the worst about Craig being at the door in his boxers and socks. And Peter pouts that Amanda wasn't expecting him, but he thought it would be nice to pick her up for their breakfast. And Craig smugly says he doesn't think Amanda's going to make it. Peter will consider their breakfast canceled, but adds that the only reason he's not smashing Craig's face into the wall is that Craig isn't worth it and neither is Amanda, which he's half right. Mm. And Amanda then comes out saying she thought she heard the door, but Craig, having found cartoons, says it must have been the TV. And at the McBride's, a very mature Taylor gives Kyle and Nick the silent treatment. Kyle grabs her arm as she heads for the door, telling her he wants her to stay, but she says that if that were true, Nick would be gone. And once she's left, Nick sarcastically says he thinks Taylor's warming up to him, but Kyle seems to have realized this is actually serious and gives Nick the classifieds, because it's the past, to find his own place, finally. And then Jake is drinking and seething in the courtyard when Allison gets home from her trip that night and instantly regrets having returned. Clip 29.
Should you do it?
Do what?
Have the abortion.
No, I didn't. I don't think I owe you an explanation.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a minute. Boy, are you staying with Amanda now? What are you doing, making the rounds around here? Hey, if I wait long enough, do you think you'll make it back to my apartment?
You're drunk.
Well, give me one good reason not to be.
How about being adult enough to face your problems without drowning yourself in booze?
Wow. This coming from you.
Leave me alone.
But Allison.
Leave me alone.
No, I'm not going to do that. There's not enough beer in the world that can make me do that. We're having a baby together. And you can't shut me out.
Yes, I can.
Go ahead, run away. You think she's your friend? Hey!
Go inside. If you don't go back into your apartment, I'll have you arrested for public drunkenness.
Bite me.
Despite that having been a brilliant last word, Jake decides to stand at the bottom of the stairs, bellowing at Allison to come out and talk to him. And inside, Allison apologizes to Amanda for Jake's assholery, but Amanda shrugs that he'll pass out soon. And when Allison says she should maybe go out there, Amanda advises her to let him cool off. And on her way to the shower, Allison hopes she's not ruining any of Amanda's plans, but Amanda says she has none. Allison figures she and Peter are still in the outs then, which reminds Amanda that she and Peter had breakfast plans she totally forgot about. And it's strange he didn't call. Speaking of Peter, he's at his apartment getting drunk when Taylor storms in, having waited an entire day to confront him about lying to her the night before. And he sarcastically apologizes and she slaps him. And he then offers to give her exactly what she's always wanted, throwing her onto the couch. And she starts fighting him off, but like barely. But it's still not great. And
no, it's not great at all.
Yeah.
It's twice in this episode for him. Like, I just don't.
Yeah.
Why I mean, do you have to do that with it?
We
it's dumb
know.
Enough.
Right, right. Yeah. We know she doesn't really mean it. And like, she stops resisting almost immediately because this is, he's right. It is what she has always wanted. But once, you know, no means no, actually.
Yeah.
Give her the
and
chance
also,
to tell you she changed her mind.
Yeah, or, I don't know, have her enthusiastically be like, you know, well, right. Now we're going to hate fuck. I mean, she's not going to say
sure.
that, but like.
Right, yes.
Like, two different people in the same episode for this mm-hmm. character, just being like menacing and mm-hmm. misdemeanor-y. I just don't. Mm-hmm. Again, this is dumb and contrived enough without having to involve sexual misconduct.
Right.
Honestly, and like Jake has the heel turn all locked up. Can we just
absolutely
focus?
Yes, especially in this case when it has been extremely well established that Taylor really does want to have sex with him. Like, don't have her say no to start with at all. Like, it's not necessary.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been like, you know, she's been such a keener creepo,
right?
That he would not be actively avoiding her at this point is nonsense, but here yeah. we all are.
Yes. And you know, she's the one who violated consent first when she kissed him while he was passed out.
True.
Not that that makes this better. It's just all, you know, think it through. This wouldn't happen now. Anyway.
Yeah.
As they're getting into it, we hear Amanda on Peter's machine apologizing and saying she thought she might stop by that night to take him for dinner. Which, like, based on Jake's level of drunkenness, I thought it was, like, midnight, which he was that wasted at, like, 7?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this is not the point, as we see the light blink on the machine and then immediately cut to Taylor and Peter going crazy on each other. And that's where we fucking finally leave this supersized episode. Oh, my God.
God. Jesus.
Let's quickly name the episode MVP. Amanda, and I feel like Amanda, really no question about
close.
It. Like, yeah. In all of her storylines. Great.
I mean, Arthur Field, honorable posthumous mention.
Fair.
Yeah.
Least valuable player. Fucking Jake.
Fucking Jake. Next time on Again With This, Jake hits Billy and then hits the road. Carter hits the prep line at Kyle's. Peter and Amanda's marriage hit the skids, and Craig hits up Nick for help. You'll feel like you've taken a hit of acid when you check out our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're at againwiththispodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can drunk dial us at 210-920-4699. And you can and should join our Patreon page. There is a ton of extra 90210 and Melrose content over there, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast, which you can hear if you're a high roller at the $5 level and up. And you will find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm posthumous probate dick move Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is honeymoon tax write-off Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer David T. Cole is having second thoughts. Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?